great Daniel Ellsberg, the whistleblower. And on Tuesday, we'll bring you James Earl Jones reading Frederick Douglass's What to the Slave is Your 4th of July and other voices of a people's history of the United States. Happy birthday to Isis Phillips. Democracy Now! Is produced with Renee Feltz, Mike Burke, Dina Guzder, Messiah Rhodes, Nermeen Sheikh, Maria Tarasena, Tammy Warnoff, Tarina Nadura, Sam Alkoff, Tamari Astudio, John Hamilton, Ravi Karan, Hani Masood, and Sanji Lopez. Our executive director is Julie Crosby. Special thanks to Becca Staley, John Randolph, Paul Powell, Mike DeFilippo, Miguel Laguerre, Hugh Grant, Dennis Moynihan, David Prude. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us.
Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. The Engineering Committee meets on the first Thursday of the month at 7 p.m. This month's meeting will be held online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting can be found on our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify if a meeting is being held.
KBOO Community Radio is conducting a survey, and we want to hear from you. Your valuable feedback about KBOO will help shape the types of music, news, and public affairs programming we bring you and our community in the years ahead. We're also interested in how you listen to KBOO, and we'll use this feedback to help serve you better. The survey is anonymous. However, you will have an opportunity to provide your contact information to enter a drawing. 10 lucky winners will receive a $50 gift card. The survey is open now, and the deadline to participate is Sunday, July 16th. Go to our website at kboo.fm/survey23. kboo.fm/survey23. Thank you in advance for your time and your feedback. It will help KBOO serve you and our community in the months and years ahead. Stay tuned for the next strategic plan coming soon.
It's Friday afternoon, and you are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM. Up next, we have the KBOO Evening News.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, two Clackamas County Sheriff's deputies are shot today.
The U.S. launches nuclear bombers to the Korean Peninsula.
And in London, actor Kevin Spacey is on trial.
I'm Sam Jones.
Two Clackamas County Sheriff's deputies were shot and injured this morning just outside the Portland-Milwaukee border. They were responding to a burglary call just before 7 a.m. The shooting happened near the intersection of Johnson Creek Boulevard and Bell Avenue. One deputy was shot in the arm, and the other was hit in their ballistic vest and abdomen. Two suspects are in custody, and there is apparently no further danger to the public. Johnson Creek Boulevard was closed between Southeast Bell and 74th Avenue, as was the part of the Springwater Corridor Trail in the area. Both deputies were taken to nearby hospitals. One has been released, and the other should be sent home soon. 194 officers have been shot in the line of duty nationally so far this year. That's a 6% increase from all of last year and a 30% increase from 2021.
Clark County's Emergency Services Agency has recorded 857 incidents of a 911 call finding no ambulances available this year. American Medical Response, or AMR, is the ambulance provider contracted to operate in Clark, Clackamas, Multnomah, and soon-to-be Washington counties. AMR has received criticism for slow response times and gaps in its ability to deliver emergency care. The company says a national shortage of paramedics underlies the failed performance standards. While emergency medical services in Multnomah County have been the company's biggest challenge, AMR has been unable to quickly respond to hundreds of emergency calls in Washington State as well. The Clark Regional Emergency Services Agency says dispatchers received 25,625 calls to 911 between January 1st, 2023 and June 20th, 2023. AMR ambulances were busy and unable to respond to about 3% of 911 calls. Multnomah County data show about 6,300 incidents where ambulances were not available, representing about 10% of the 911 calls received in the county. Having no ambulances available can be frustrating for and discouraging to firefighters, since their trucks are not designed to transport patients or provide mobile emergency care. Several issues are contributing to the overall problem. Hospitals are having a hard time staffing, so the ambulances are getting tied up while admitting patients. Ambulance companies are also having a hard time hiring paramedics. In addition, people often call 911 for non-emergencies, or they phone multiple times for the same incident. First responders in Clark County recently started tiering 911 calls of a new program known as Nurse Navigation. They have also added basic life support units for lower acuity calls. AMR declined an interview request with local television, and Clark County EMS Medical Program Director Dr. Lynn Whitwer could not be reached for comment.
President Biden wants to maintain diversity after the recent Supreme Court affirmative action decision. The Teamsters say a UPS strike is imminent, and major United States cities are dealing with different houselessness issues. With those stories and more, it's Catherine Carley with 2023 Talks.
Welcome to 2023 Talks, where we are following our democracy in historic times.
Through a tortured interpretation of law, of history, of present-day fact, the court has taken the law and our society and put us in a pretzel.
Damon Hewitt with the Lawyers Committee for Civil Rights Under Law calls the Supreme Court's decision to outlaw affirmative action in college admissions a travesty of justice. The court's conservative majority overturned decades of precedent in invalidating admissions plans at Harvard and the University of North Carolina. The ruling is expected to alter college admissions policies across the country. President Joe Biden has directed the Department of Education to analyze what practices can still ensure more diverse student bodies. The Teamsters Union says a strike is inevitable if UPS does not return a best and final contract offer by today. Teamsters President Sean O'Brien says workers are demanding higher part-time pay, more full-time jobs, and greater job security.
UPS is going to determine if UPS strikes themselves by not giving what our members deserve, and it's the best contract in the industry.
UPS delivers about a quarter of all U.S. parcels. The workers' current contract expires July 31st. A strike could be triggered August 1st if no agreement is reached. New York City is hosting a record 100,000 people in its homeless shelters. More than half are migrants. Deputy Mayor Ann Williams-Isom says the city is working to find the migrants temporary homes outside the city, as well as lawyers to help with their asylum claims.
This is a national humanitarian crisis, and we need sustained and profound support from the federal government in the form of financial aid and in the form of a national coordination.
Williams-Isom says of the 50,000 migrants now in shelters, more than two-thirds are families with children. Air quality alerts are in effect for 16 states and the nation's capital as smoke from Canadian wildfires continues to blanket parts of the Great Lakes and Mid-Atlantic regions. Washington, D.C. Mayor Muriel Bowser is advising residents to take precautions.
If you don't have to be outside, then don't be outside. If you do need to be outside, to wear a mask and to limit your exposure.
Meanwhile, 120-degree heat indexes are being felt from Missouri to Florida. Former Ohio State House Speaker Larry Householder has been sentenced to 20 years in prison for orchestrating a nearly $60 million bribery scheme. Householder and three others were charged in a pay-to-play scheme that helped Householder win the speakership and pass a more than $1 billion bailout for two nuclear power plants. The number of homeless residents in Los Angeles County has spiked again, increasing by 9% since last year. Nearly 76,000 people are homeless on any given night across LA County. I'm Catherine Carley for Pacifica Network and Public News Service.
States across the nation are reassessing Medicaid eligibility. Florida may be dumping children and families. Tramell Gomez tells us more.
Of the 4.9 million Medicaid enrollees, Florida purged about 300,000 people from its Medicaid rolls when the federal government removed protections put in place to keep everyone covered during the pandemic. Healthcare advocates are voicing concerns over those being kicked off the rolls for procedural issues, like failing to respond or sending in documents as requested. Lynn Hearn with the Florida Health Justice Project says she's also concerned about a change of plans at the Florida Department of Children and Families. The agency initially said they would hold off on Medicaid redeterminations for kids under 21 with medically complex conditions until spring of next year.
Another variation from their plan is that medically complex children were scheduled to be last during the 12-month process, and we are hearing from many who are being terminated early in the process.
Before dropping people from Medicaid, DCF says it contacts them multiple times through texts, letters, emails, and calls. Instructions on how to renew coverage are supposed to arrive 45 days before someone's renewal date. Hearn says her organization has posted a toolkit on its website for anyone needing a guide to manage the changes. Marcus Robinson with United Healthcare says people might have options for insurance coverage through circumstances that are considered a qualifying event, which makes someone eligible outside of a yearly defined enrollment period, like the sudden loss of employment.
Other things that are qualifying life events, change in marital status, so getting married or divorced, and then having a baby, either through adoption or having a baby naturally. Also death in the family.
Robinson says little known qualifying events include moving or relocating and changes in your income. The UnitedHealthcare.com website also has more information. Because Florida is among the handful of states that have not expanded Medicaid for low-income adults, groups like the Florida Health Justice Project say they're hearing heartbreaking stories from people with no health coverage alternative. This is Tramell Gomes for Florida News Connection.
The United States flew nuclear-capable bombers to the Korean Peninsula today. This appears to be a show of force against North Korea, which recently staged massive anti-U.S. rallies in its capital, and which has been pushing to expand its nuclear capabilities. The long-range B-52 bombers took part in joint aerial drills with other U.S. and South Korean fighter jets over the peninsula. The flyover is the latest in a series of temporary U.S. deployments of strategic assets in South Korea. 2 weeks ago, the U.S. deployed a nuclear-powered submarine capable of carrying about 150 Tomahawk missiles to South Korean waters. This was the first such event in 6 years. The sub, the USS Michigan, arrived one day after North Korea resumed its own missile tests. North Korea has allegedly viewed previous US-South Korean drills as a potential rehearsal for an invasion. The South Korean Defense Ministry said the deployment of the B-52 bombers boosted the visibility of US strategic assets on the peninsula. South Korea says the Allies have been demonstrating a firm resolve to strengthen combined defense postures, and that they will continue joint drills involving U.S. strategic bombers. Last Sunday, more than 120,000 North Koreans participated in mass rallies to mark the 73rd anniversary of the start of the Korean War. Officials and residents delivered speeches vowing so-called merciless revenge against the United States over the war. There were also accusations that the U.S. is plotting an invasion of North Korea. The Korean War actually ended with an armistice, not a peace treaty, that technically left the peninsula in a state of war. The U.S. currently stations about 28,000 troops in South Korea as potential deterrents. President Biden stated at a recent summit that any North Korean nuclear attack on the U.S. or its allies would, quote, result in the end of whatever regime took such action, end quote. Since the start of 2022, North Korea has carried out more than 100 missile tests to enlarge its arsenal of missiles capable of targeting the U.S. mainland and South Korea. In late May, a North Korean launch of a rocket carrying its first spy satellite ended in failure, with the rocket crashing soon after liftoff. North Korea has repeatedly said it will attempt a second launch because it is allegedly crucial to build a space-based surveillance system to cope with U.S. hostilities.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for Counterspin, your look behind the headlines by FAIR.org. At 6, it's Rising Up with Sun Ali. Then at 7, Civic Cipher. Tonight's weather will show clear skies with a low of 53 degrees. Tomorrow will be sunny with a high of 84. Today in history, in 1937, the world's first emergency number, 999, was introduced in London. And in 1953, the first Chevy Corvette rolled off the assembly line in Flint, Michigan. The quote of the day is from comedian Buddy Hackett, who died this day in 2003. Hackett said, "I've had a few arguments with people, but I never carry a grudge. While you're carrying a grudge, they're out dancing."
Oscar-winning actor Kevin Spacey came under fire today during his sexual assault trial in London. The prosecutor said in her opening statement he is, quote, "a man who does not respect personal boundaries or space, a man who, it would seem, delights in making others feel powerless and uncomfortable, a sexual bully," end quote. Spacey, 63, has pled not guilty to a dozen charges involving four men. Allegations date from 2001 to 2013, when he worked at London's Old Vic Theatre. The charges include sexual assault, indecent assault, and causing a person to engage in penetrative sexual activity without consent. Penalties could be quite high, including potential prison time. Spacey's lawyer, Patrick Gibbs, said the actor denies all allegations of non-consensual activity. He suggested to jurors the alleged victims had other motives in coming forward. He added jurors would hear truths, half-truths, deliberate exaggerations, and, quote, "many damned lies," end quote. The actor served as the Old Vic Theatre's artistic director from 2003 until 2015. The four men who have accused Spacey of sexual assault, now in their 30s or 40s, did not apparently know each other. During police questioning last year, Spacey said he was baffled and deeply hurt by those allegations from persons he considered friends. He said that events have been reimagined into lies. In his statement to police, Spacey said he had not done anything without consent. He did say it was possible, and indeed likely, he had made a so-called clumsy pass. He suggested some of the men were seeking financial gains. At least one of the accusers came forward after reading about allegations against Spacey in the United States. Sexual misconduct allegations arising during the Me Too movement derailed Spacey's career. He was written off the Netflix political thriller House of Cards, where he played lead character Frank Underwood, a corrupt U.S. congressman who tricks his way into the presidency. He was also cut from the completed film All the Money in the World, with scenes getting reshot with actor Christopher Plummer. A jury of 9 men and 5 women are part of the 4-week trial in Southwark Crown Court. The actor, who has homes in London and the U.S., is free on bail. He has earned multiple prominent acting awards for the theater, the silver screen, and television. He won an Academy Award for Supporting Actor in The Usual Suspects in 1995 and a Best Actor Oscar for the 1999 movie American Beauty. Spacey recently said in an interview, quote, "there are people right now who are ready to hire me the moment I'm cleared of these charges," end quote.
Social isolation of the U.S. elderly is a major concern, and the pandemic made things worse. Groups in Minnesota are working hard to connect seniors to their communities. Mike Moen joins us with more on the story.
Concerns about loneliness among older people aren't going away, but an annual grant program for community-level projects could bring more Minnesotans, young and old, together. Groups like AARP say a growing body of research links being alone with negative health outcomes. The organization hopes its community challenge grants can fix some of these issues. A handful of this year's grantees in Minnesota have projects with a mission to improve social connections across all ages. AARP Minnesota's Jay Hoppala says social isolation is a public health issue. It is something they hear about from members.
They want to have chances for intergenerational interactions, but the way we set up our communities often keeps us separated.
Hoppala points to senior housing communities that aren't always conducive to making connections with younger people. He adds the lingering effects of the pandemic, along with advancements in technology, tend to keep people more isolated. One new grant is for a Duluth project, where an urban college farm will be converted into an age and ability inclusive gathering space. In Alexandria, Nancy Klepetka recently co-founded a local chapter of the Cycling Without Age program. The affiliate received a community challenge grant to buy certain bicycles that allow trained volunteers to give rides to elders who have restricted mobility.
We always tell one another, bikes don't discriminate, only when you can't ride one. And we're taking that out of the equation. We're making sure people can get on the front of this specialized bike, enjoy the wind in their hair.
She says the conversations between the rider and volunteers are a key part of the social interaction. Klepetka says improved technology has its benefits, but adds things like streaming devices often prompt people to stay home alone. She hopes projects like these motivate people of all ages to sometimes put their phones away and connect with other community members. Mike Moen, Minnesota News Connection.
Questions are being raised regarding the societal pluses and minuses of online sports betting. It doesn't always get the same attention as drugs and alcohol. Mike Moen has more on the story, coming to us again from Minnesota.
Minnesota is in wait-and-see mode again when it comes to legalizing online sports betting. But one lawmaker hopes for more public discussion about any potential harms before anticipated votes next year. The recent legislative session saw a renewed push to adopt a sports betting plan, but it ultimately faded behind other priorities. Lawmakers from both parties say as other states implement their own laws, Minnesota needs to keep pace to avoid losing revenue or seeing consumers seek out the illegal market. DFL Senator John Marty contends there's been too much debate in Minnesota over which entities would benefit as opposed to protecting those who might fall into problem gambling.
If we're going to legalize a system where powerful international corporations can profit by encouraging people to conduct very risky behavior, what I want to do is make sure this issue is fully vetted.
Marty chairs the Senate Finance Committee and worries about platforms marketing to college-age students. He says it might be premature to call for a hearing later this year before a likely debate next session, but adds he would like to see more public dialogue. A key bill sponsor this year couldn't be reached for comment, but a recent version offered to use some revenue for a problem gambling assistance program. Susan Sheridan Tucker leads the Minnesota Alliance on Problem Gambling. While her group is neutral on legalizing sports betting, she feels the public doesn't take the issue as seriously as other forms of addiction.
It can be triggering for those with an addiction, and it can be very alluring to those who have no experience with gambling and don't necessarily understand the risks that are involved.
And with the sports betting bill expected to be reconsidered, the organization is out with a new public awareness campaign that focuses on the seriousness of gambling addiction. Tucker adds that while there is free treatment available for problem gambling, the funding pales in comparison to treatment and prevention of alcohol and substance abuse. Mike Moen, Minnesota News Connection.
There is significant concern over how the recent Supreme Court affirmative action decision will affect Native students. And the Blackfeet Nation just released 24 wild buffalo. The area involved had not hosted those animals in more than 100 years. With those stories and more, it's Antonia Gonzalez with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. With a new decision from the Supreme Court, colleges nationwide can no longer consider a student's race during the admissions process. After decades of affirmative action, what comes next for Native students? South Dakota Public Broadcasting's CJ Keene checks in.
The 6-3 ruling will have sweeping implications at campuses across the nation, from Harvard and Stanford to USD and BHSU. NPR reports the ruling will mainly impact a few hundred schools with highly selective admissions, but advocates are still concerned about the implications. Samantha Chapman is an advocacy manager with the ACLU of South Dakota. She says they anticipated this ruling.
It doesn't make it any less devastating for students across America. Here in South Dakota, particularly our Native students. The movement against affirmative action is definitely part of a larger effort to rewrite our nation's history and have a small group of people dictate what this country looks like and how we talk about who we are. From this ruling here about affirmative action to erasing the existence of LGBTQ and two-spirit people on college campuses through the acknowledgement of their pronouns.
She says the ruling could open the door to similar situations.
I would assume that based on the same legal framework, we could expect a similar result if a case were to come to the Supreme Court regarding corporate affirmative action practices.
Chapman says the ACLU of South Dakota hasn't raised the white flag yet.
On Twitter, I've seen some lawmakers already stating that they will bring bills next legislative session to ban affirmative action outright here in our state. And I just want them to know that if there is any attempt to ban race-conscious academic admissions, we will be there to oppose it. And to remind them that a race-conscious admissions process is the extension of a university's academic freedom to assemble a student body across all races and ethnicities.
In response to the decision, President Joe Biden has directed the Department of Education to analyze practices and create more inclusive and diverse student bodies. For National Native News in Rapid City, I'm CJ Keen.
Four national Native organizations which provide scholarships are raising concerns about the Supreme Court's ruling on affirmative action. In a statement Thursday, the American Indian College Fund, the American Indian Science and Engineering Society, the Cobell Scholarship Program, and the Native Forward Scholars Fund said they're disheartened by the ruling, saying for decades, affirmative action provided worthy for American Indian and Alaska Native students with the opportunity for affordable higher education. They're expressing to Native students not to let the decision discourage their higher education goals. And the organizations are calling on higher education institutions, policymakers, advocates, and students to ensure higher education is accessible for all and that Native cultures and contributions are embraced. This week, the Blackfeet Nation released roughly two dozen free-roaming bison onto tribal lands bordering Glacier National Park. Montana Public Radio's Aaron Bolton reports it's the first time the landscape has seen the animal in over a century.
The bison were released on tribal lands near Chief Mountain, which borders the national park. Blackfeet Tribal Business Council Vice Chairman Lauren Monroe Jr. says it's an act of tribal sovereignty and rights historical wrongs.
Saying, you know, the Blackfeet are in charge here. We're in charge of our homelands. This is what we're going to do. And this is how we're going to do it. And we don't have to ask permission to be Blackfeet anymore.
The federal government led a campaign in the 1800s to wipe buffalo from the landscape. The intent was to gain leverage over tribal nations by pushing them into hunger. Monroe says the tribe plans to monitor how the herd reproduces and the impact the keystone species return has on other wildlife. The tribe hopes the herd will eventually grow large enough for tribal hunts, but will also be an economic boon for tourists eager to catch a glimpse of buffalo not seen on these lands for 100 years. In Columbia Falls, I'm Aaron Bolton.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
Companies are buying solar energy online from underinvested communities. Dr. Anthony Leisowitz has more on the story with Climate Connections.
I'm Dr. Anthony Leisowitz, and this is Climate Connections. When corporations decide to transition to clean energy, they rarely power their operations directly with wind or solar generated on site. Instead, they often pay for renewable energy that's generated elsewhere and fed to the electric grid. That renewable electricity often comes from big solar and wind farms. But Dana Claire Redden, founder of Solar Stewards, saw an opportunity for companies to meet their renewable energy goals by supporting small solar projects installed at community institutions instead, so the revenue can benefit those groups.
We're talking about community centers, we're talking about local schools, we're talking about places of worship.
Her business developed an online marketplace where companies can buy solar power generated in underinvested communities.
So what we do is aggregate those opportunities into a modicum of scale and showcase the value of these community-centered projects to corporate buyers who are very much interested in making sure that their climate and carbon reduction strategy is equitable.
She says the approach can help make sure that corporate climate action brings financial benefit to communities where it can make a meaningful difference. Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To hear more stories like this, visit climateconnections.org.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News for Friday, June 30th, 2023. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news, stories, and tips at 971-245-2158. The producer for tonight's newscast is Josh Salem, and our engineer is Laura Miller. Special thanks to Antonia Gonzalez, Catherine Carley, Mike Moen, Tremel Gomes, and Dr. Anthony Lizowitz. The director of the evening news is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Sam Jones.
And I'm Josh Salem. All of our KBOO programs, including the evening news, are supported by our members. If you would like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. The KBOO Evening News is off on Monday for the holiday, so we'll take this opportunity to say Happy Fourth. Stay tuned now for Counterspin.
Welcome to Counterspin, your weekly look behind the headlines. I'm Janine Jackson. This week on Counterspin, the Supreme Court has, just as we record,